You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. And this is episode 327 of the Columbia Calling podcast. Quick shout out to all of you who tuned in faithfully to the last three episodes. That's 326, 325, and 324. It was a three-part series where Nadia Dross, the journalist from Canada, was on talking about her experiences in crossing the Darien Gap in parallel crossing to those migrants trying to make their way up to the United States. There's an article in the California Sunday magazine, and indeed there will be a PBS NewsHour documentary coming up at some point in the future, so keep an eye out open for that. And thank you all again. The numbers keep on increasing, keep on climbing. Of course, I think that has a lot to do with so many of us being at home, homeschooling, or of course, just seeking out new hobbies here as we remain in our homes under lockdown. In particular here in Bogota, I know that the other day that the barrio, the district of Kennedy, in the south of Bogota, has gone under complete and total lockdown. That means that the numbers of infections in Kennedy are increasing exponentially. Of course, the numbers are growing in Colombia because numbers of tests and test results have increased too. So we will see, we will wait and see how this unfolds in the next few weeks. I fear, and my negative view on this is that we're just a few weeks behind Peru, but I hope not, and I hope that this mandatory lockdown and quarantine has been, well, of use to us. Maybe it has, maybe it hasn't. We will see as the time ticks on. This week on episode 327, we have a very special guest on the line from Cartagena. His name's Rainbow Nelson. Those of you who read the British and international press will recognize his name. He writes quite a lot of stuff for Wallpaper and other magazines and newspapers, guidebooks and so on. And he owns, well, he's the director of a company called This is Cartagena. And there's a spin-off, of course, of This is Colombia. This is Cartagena, I would say, is a boutique agency who can set up anything you want in the Cartagena region and incredible activities and options. And of course, with Rainbow on the show, we'll be talking tourism. And we're talking about winding the clock back on tourism. How can we do it better now that we pretty much have to start from scratch once again? We have to, you know, gauge what tourists, what travelers, what visitors to Colombia are going to be looking for. What will the national market be seeking out? So we'll be talking about that in the next segment of this show. Unfortunately, Adrian Alsema, who's there in Medellin, the director of Columbia Reports, is too overworked this week to give us another week of news segments. So we'll be skipping that this week and going straight into the final segment with Rainbow Nelson. So don't go away and listen and tune in and, well, think about what Rainbow has to say as someone on the front lines of the tourism industry. Thank you again for listening, and I'll be back in a few short minutes. Bye-bye. And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall here in Bogota, Colombia. And my very special guest this week is Rainbow Nelson, who's on the line from Cartagena. Rainbow has been in Cartagena, living there since 1996. He's originally a journalist, still contributes to a lot of the mainstream, independent, and worldwide media. But he's also running and is the director of a great, I would say, boutique sort of travel agency, travel connoisseur type organization called This Is Cartagena, so TICartagena.com, and you can find all sorts of options for every budget, but best for a top end in Cartagena and around. So we're going to be discussing some tourism related tales and of course thoughts and thought processes as we think about how the clock is winding back and winding down on tourism. But I won't go into this further. We'll go into it with Rainbow Rainbow, thank you for agreeing to be on the podcast.
Hi, Richard. Thank you for inviting me. It's great to be on.
No, it's a great pleasure to have you on, and I regret not having you on earlier, but you know, this is the way it happens. And just tell us, I mean, Cartagena, the jewel in Colombia's crown, the everlasting city of Colombian tourism. You're there at the moment. You're under kind of house arrest because of the virus. What is it like? I mean, Cartagena is synonymous for me with noise, because you can never get away with the beeping cars, but it's so beautiful and so picturesque and romantic. But what's it like right now?
It's changed a lot, obviously. Well, it's a bit more like Mompox. And it feels like we've definitely gone back in time to a much more peaceful version of Cartagena. I watched this amazing video that was doing the rounds on YouTube recently of Barranquilla and Cartagena back in 1940. Did you see it? It was just incredible, just to sort of see what Colombia used to be like, when people arrived on ocean liners and kind of, to see the guys wandering around Cartagena dressed all in white with their hats and, just all the crazy streets sort of like unpaved and the chaos around the market. It took me back to kind of the first time I arrived here in 1996. And obviously with the virus, obviously the tourism industry has just been wiped out here, and it's having a terrible impact on everyone in the city. All the bars, restaurants, agencies, travel agencies have popped up, and the streets, they've all closed. Everything's kind of completely been obliterated. It's almost like a kind of nuclear bomb's gone off without actually kind of leveling the buildings, but there's nothing left, and very few of the businesses that we work with will survive, and just really sad. Yesterday, one of my favorite restaurants closed. It's Don Juan, which has been kind of a pillar of the city's kind of culinary scene for the last 10 years at least, and they closed their doors yesterday, and there's going to be a lot of that over the next few months, as people just can't afford to keep operating with the rents and the money coming in, and obviously zero support from the government. It's just going to wipe out everybody, and it's going to go back to kind of Cartagena as it was, 1996, when there was just a handful of hostels and maybe La Vitrola and Mr. Laria and a couple other places that tourists would kind of like crawl it, find their way to perhaps, and that's it. And it's kind of back to ground zero, really. And it's going to be very difficult for the city to come out of this, finding work for 35% of the population. It's going to be a big challenge, but it's some ways it's a huge opportunity, a huge sort of chance to do it all again, and in some ways to avoid some of the mistakes that were made previously, I think. I don't know whether other people see it the same, but there are sort of opportunities to create a new roadmap where we kind of don't recreate some of the mess that was here before, which wasn't so enjoyable being in Cartagena 3 months ago. It's amazing to see the difference, but the industry itself is on its knees, and it'll be very, very interesting to see how it recovers.
This is Cartagena will survive.
Well, I mean, we don't feel relevant at all anymore, obviously. I mean, we created the website in 2011. Perhaps when we created it, I was writing for a lot of magazines, Condé Nast Traveler, Wallpaper, those sorts of things, about Cartagena and about Colombia. And I was finally beginning to sell stories that weren't, focused on some of the negative aspects of life in Colombia, like narcotráfico and everything. And so I decided I wanted to set up something that would keep me at home rather than having to travel to write about travel. I wanted to do it here. And it really took off, and because at the time, Cartagena 2011 was becoming very, very popular, very trendy, very, very much a kind of like a desirable destination for the early adopters, you know, sort of the jet set who were, you know, friends with some of the richest people in Colombia were coming in, and they found this new place on the map, and they were, you know, sort of blown away by its beauty and the sort of the fun that could be had. You know, the city became a real party town, and we were kind of able to kind of pick up on a lot of that. You know, for the last 10 years we've been doing it, and we've, you know, we kind of were the first. But when we went live, the number one website for, you know, Cartagena, Colombia was Cartagena.info, which I think was a website made in 1996. It's just full of meta links and stuff, and it was a very poor way of navigating your way around what there was to do in Cartagena. And we created a kind of a website which was intended to sort of bring people into the city and give them a real understanding of, like, that, you know, some of the more authentic experiences that could be had here, you know, like playing baseball and in the streets and in and around Getsemani. And we were really focused on Getsemani, which was where I was living, and, you know, the sort of experiences that you'd have there. Like, you know, there were some great things happening back then. You know, Zumba in the plaza and everybody hanging out there, and some cool little bars opening up like Cafe Havana. And, you know, it just felt, it felt like a hidden, you know, new secret that people were discovering. And yeah, but now, I mean, you know, our traffic is non-existent. There's nobody looking at us. So, you know, whether we survive or not, it depends. It depends on a lot of things. But in some ways, you know, it's like, I feel like it's run its cycle, and I'm not sure whether it will continue or not. But if it doesn't, then it's just part of, you know, what's happening right now, is that people are beginning to rethink what is relevant, what's necessary. You know, people are rethinking, you know, how they travel or how they live, or, you know, what they spend their money on and what's important to them. So, you know, I'm enjoying this process really of like trying to reconfigure and trying to work out what's next. I don't feel like I need to hang on to what I've done in the past. I feel like it's a moment to sort of reinvent myself and reinvent what the way things are done. And I, you know, I hope that other people see it the same, really, that we don't just go back to what was there in the past, that we've kind of come out of this with something a lot more healthy, really.
Obviously you and I read a lot, and we're sort of plugged into these webinars and forums, and a concern, of course, would you, people talk about the opportunity, people talk about how we can evolve, but, you know, do we get the feeling that is the overwhelming, you know, that's the overwhelming aim here, or is Colombia just wants to flick the switch, tourism back on, let's try and get the numbers in?
I mean, I think everyone's in this kind of crisis mode, obviously. People don't really know what's going to happen next. It's very clear that everyone's very uncertain right now. I'm looking at statistics right now on my screen, which sort of look at like how tourism's grown from, you know, $1 billion to $6 billion in the last sort of 20 years, 2000 to 2019. So, you know, it's become a very important part of the Colombian economy, and obviously the politicians and you know, the hacienda will want to get those numbers back up as fast as possible. Question is, you know, is that the right thing to do? Is it best to go backwards to where we were before, where, you know, all of Colombia's marketing and tourism seem to focus on just getting bums on seats, getting numbers, you know, getting people through the, you know, the cruise terminals, and, you know, just getting as many people through the airports as possible? Or do we want to think a bit more about, you know, the quality of the people that are coming, or the amount of money they're spending, and the impact they're having on the environment, and, you know, whether they are people that are going to come back repeatedly over a period of, you know, 30, 40 years, you know, who do we want to focus on? And what do we want the industry to achieve? You know, do we want it just to keep going up as a kind of a graph that just inexorably going upwards in terms of numbers of visitors, which is what, you know, I think people have been overly focused on. Or do we want it to, you know, actually kind of improve people's quality of life, you know, and make people better off and improve the kind of the impact it has across the country, not just in one place like Cartagena, you know, spread the love a little bit and make an industry that can have a bigger impact in other places, perhaps. I think that would be a healthy response. And it makes sense for us to listen a little bit more, to, you know, to spend a bit of time working out what people want rather than just, you know, telling them, just going back to the past and what people were wanted before. I think people are going to come out of this wanting different things. And just to go backwards and say, okay, right, well, let's get the ports open, let's get the airport up and running again and make sure that we've got bars and everything open. That just seems like, you know, sort of ignoring the very fact that the world's changed.
I'm going to talk about Cartagena in this respect, but yeah, I've been a lot over these years and so on, but then I've tended to go less and less. And I didn't know that Don Juan had closed their doors. I love that restaurant and others and you know, cool places opening up. I enjoyed seeing the sophistication developing in the city. But I was finding it overwhelming and exhausting. And I know I'm a gringo. I know I'm always going to stand out as a white guy wandering through the streets, but I was finding it exhausting. And I think you mentioned a percentage, was it? How many people work in tourism in Cartagena? And you sort of wonder, what's going to happen now? What happens in the barrios with all these people outside the walled city? You know, the guys who would come in the rebusque, just trying to make ends meet. And there's nothing. I mean, there's nothing at all. And if we were to wind back the clock on tourism in Cartagena and in other parts of Colombia, how would we... I mean, it's an impossible question, I guess, but how do we organize it to be of a greater benefit to the masses in Colombia? I mean, the have-nots.
Well, I mean, it's a big challenge, but clearly one of the things that was becoming very alarming to me was just to see how much waste was being produced, you know, and you know, I think any industry, you know, Colombia is apparently a sustainable tourism destination. Well, that's complete nonsense. We all know that. But, you know, the idea that we can become one is obviously something that should be celebrated. You know, that there is a political will or a desire to make that, you know, make us like a Costa Rica or, you know, use other examples. So that for that to happen, you know, right now, you know, Cartagena was, I think, became the first sustainable tourism destination in Colombia because everybody filled in a form that said they were sustainable, right? Which is obvious nonsense because they weren't, you know, and the bars were producing enormous quantities of waste, plastic and all that sort of stuff, and nothing being done with it. There's no recycling, for instance, in Cartagena, right? So, you know, what does need to happen is people need to start joining up the dots. And that's just not just the tourism industry. It's across the board. Every industry needs to start looking at how it becomes circular, that they create these circular economies where, you know, the one person's waste is another person's, you know, sort of treasure. And then that gets processed. And then we're not just pumping shit out into the system, you know, into the oceans and, you know, sort of wherever the rubbish gets taken, you know, you see it all just clogging up the arteries of the city. And you know, so, you know, any tourism in any industry, full stop, tourism, whatever, needs to start thinking about that. And Colombia, in general, needs to start thinking about that. You know, does it want to be a country that builds its economy on, you know, extracting its resources, or does it want to create something that's circular? that can be more sustainable, regenerative, that can build, that can go on indefinitely, you know, rather than just, you know, consuming everything as fast as possible. So, if they're really serious about creating sustainable tourism in Colombia, which if there are people in the horse of power that are, and there are many companies that are serious about that, then that would be great, you know, just starting with that. And I think the world over, I think there's a lot of places that are currently pumping money into the system, but they're pumping money to keep an old system running rather than pumping that money into the future and sort of a more sustainable and healthy kind of economy built around renewable energy and so on and so forth. So, you know, if we're looking to the future, I think the future needs to be green, right? I mean, because clearly the past didn't work, and that's why, you know, we were sent this virus to stop us from jumping onto planes.
The environmental side of things, of course, I think is key. And yeah, I know all about those documents where we just fill out the form saying we're sustainable, because it's a suggestion that we are on the route to becoming sustainable, but the infrastructure does not exist to allow us to become sustainable. And you picked out recycling. Supposedly my industries and my little businesses in Mompox are sustainable, but you know, where does the waste get taken? There is no recycling. There is no division. It's a small town in the middle of nowhere. I mean, if we can't expect it in the big cities, less so. And, you know, where does the water waste go? Well, right into the river. Of course it does. Do we have solar panels? I want them. I priced it all up. It was, 60 odd million to put on solar panels all over the place and get off the Electrica Ibe grid. But it was too much money, and it was made very difficult. And because the best technology had to be imported, although I believe there's some good stuff here now. And of course, then the taxes on importation were incredibly high. So you go from one thing to the next thing. The will for a lot of people is there. We want to do it. It needs to be a lifestyle choice and then move into, you know, just common practice. But it's so hard. It's so hard when... I think we just come back to the things. It's like putting the bums in the seats, getting the numbers up and getting the, and without naming names, the tourism authorities here patting themselves on the back for another 10,000 people coming in 1 week in August or something, you know, saying, isn't this amazing? Isn't it amazing? But like you say, to what end? If we're not putting things back, and if we're not being more inclusive and more environmental, and we're not thinking about how to promote sort of greater reconciliation across the country and, do this in an apolitical fashion that's not being labeled left or right, how can we create something that's much more of a holistic experience for our guests as well?
Yeah, totally. And I think, you know, the research that is coming out is people are going to want that. People will definitely want a much more holistic, a much more, authentic and natural, experience with nature. After they come out of this, you know, you look at the most popular Google searches in under quarantine, and they're all about that. They're all about getting out into nature, getting onto a bicycle and, you know, getting up into the mountains and so on and so forth. So, you know, that's a positive. And I think it would be great if people were open to that and were kind of, you know, in some ways able to provide some sort of stimulus to that, because that's definitely the way forward. I mean, it just seems so obvious.
Yeah.
When you look at it, it's like, you know, Colombia has these amazing natural resources. They should be protected. They should be regenerated. There should be, you know, tree planting happening to offset all of the flights coming into Colombia. There should be, you know, sort of, as you said, more inclusive, you know, initiatives that incorporate ex-combatants. You know, the point is we have to create a healthier society, whether that's Colombia or across the world. And and you know, tourism should contribute to that and not be a negative component in that search for sort of, you know, a better life.
I've been reading, and we've been reading, I'm sure, it's, you know, everyone's predicting, and I, of course, predictions at this moment are nothing better than best guesses. You can't know, but I think we can lean towards the probability, a higher probability, of course, that the first wave of tourism to return to our, you know, relevant destinations is going to be domestic. Of course it is. I mean, I think obviously long haul and far from home and far from security is going to be less popular for a while, and less considered perhaps. And so we got the local, you know, the local tourism, and you know, that will be fine for me, except for me in Montbos, we do get a lot of local tourism, and they tend to be so complicated. You know, the Colombian market is the hardest market for me, where I'm used to having good prices, honest prices, but which reflect that I'm paying into my staff's, you know, single mothers, three children, etc., living with dirt floors, but I'm paying into their pension funds, and I'm paying into their what do you call it, healthcare funds, and I'm helping them in whatever I possibly can. I'm still to this day doing so, because these are humble people. They, you know, live hand to mouth. But and I need my prices in, to be able to cover these costs and to have an international standard of service. Most of my guests are French, German, or were French, German, and then a mix up of other Central European countries. And for me, the biggest difficulty was, you know, various regional idiosyncrasies turning up and just trying to hammer out the greatest discount possible. And you know, I understand it's part of the culture, and I understand negotiating needs to be done. But I'm also trying to do something here, and I'm trying to help people. And it's not just about, it's, you know, I'm not just selling you a bed and a room. This is far greater than that. So I don't know how it affects you in Cartagena.
Yeah, I mean, we have zero business with Colombian, you know, travelers, principally because our website's always been in English. And so therefore, the only people that contact us really are you know, from America or from the UK or Australia. The Colombian market, yeah, it's difficult. And, you know, I don't think they really always kind of appreciate some of the things you're just talking about, and they're looking for value because they don't get very well, you know, the majority of them aren't very well paid. So, you know, they don't have a lot of money to spend when they go on holiday, especially not now. It's going to be very difficult for a lot of people. But then there are more and more, you know, Colombians that do get it. And I think, you know, that they will be prepared to pay for the right service, and they will be prepared to pay, you know, something that helps as well. And I think one of the positives from this may be that the people begin to be a lot more thoughtful of other people. I mean, you know, I hope that's one of the outcomes from this. I've noticed that, you know, just here, that people are really, you know, passionate about helping people right now, because they realize that, you know, people need support, no safety net here. And so, you know, there's some great movements sort of that I've seen pop up here in Cartagena, where they're trying to, you know, get food to people who need it. And I hope that people understand that, you know, that tourism, you know, is one of the main sources of employment in a lot of places. And therefore, you know, they'll be ready to put money back into the economy. The problem is if people don't have that money, then how can they travel, and how can they kind of, you know, you know, the middle class in Colombia, the people who do vacation, you know, they've been obliterated by this. I don't know whether they're going to be able to travel or not. Maybe the wealthier sort of strata says, but yeah, the people that used to come to Cartagena, you know, they, with the Colombians, they just don't come here anymore because it became so expensive, you know, and they just go to different places. Santa Marta or or whatever, even abroad, it's like, cheaper than Cartagena sometimes, you know.
Convenience.
But yeah, there's, you know, it will be interesting to see what happens. I think Colombia, Cartagena, you know, it'd be great for Colombians to finally to go back out and get to, you know, visit other places in their country like Mompox, or, you know, go and get to know places that previously weren't on the map because they were, you know, off limits because of the conflict and so on. So, you know, hopefully it'll be a great opportunity for people to get to know places that they haven't ever been to before, because they can't go abroad, or they, you know, they won't be able to go abroad. And that will be hopefully good for everybody to see how important the travel industry is to certain locations now, like the coffee region, or, you know, Santander and the area around there. I mean, you know, it's become just as important as it is here.
Do you think that we could, you know, if it was all of these movements in the right direction, environmental inclusive reconciliation, independence, and so on, do you think there would be something about measuring or staggering the high season a bit? Because I think that's been just, you know, obviously for me as well, Easter, Jazz Festival, and Christmas, it's a cash cow. But I find it so damaging, this huge just glut of tourists at once, and everyone increasing their prices to try and get as much out of you know, a visitor as they possibly can in a shorter period of time. And I just find it, I don't find there to be, you know, especially Colombians, I feel awful. You know, it just doesn't add up. And usually a lot of them will go away. And in particular, let's say in Mompox, after spending, you know, let's say too much money on an average meal, they feel like they've been cheated. Do you think this will lead to, or we'll just go back to the regular high seasons?
Yeah, I mean, it's always just linked to the kids often, isn't it? And the, you know, obviously couples and different, you know, different groups can, like, you know, business and corporate travel and so on, they can travel at different times of the year. But, you know, those real peaks come when the schools are on holiday, and so you're always going to have that, whether that's here or, you know, abroad. You know, we started to feel less the seasonality of it in Cartagena because of all the direct flights coming down from the States. And lots of different, you know, holiday weekends there would be our peak time. But yeah, the high season's always going to be the most ridiculous time of year. The worst time of year to travel, the worst time of year to visit Cartagena, the worst time of year to visit Mompox. So, you know, we just have to hope that perhaps new practices like may emerge, you know, like people working remotely, people being schooled remotely, you know, that this may well change the way people move around, you know, because, you know, I mean, right now my kids could be anywhere. They're at school, but, you know, they could be connected in your hotel doing their school whilst, you know, I connect in a coffee shop to do my work. And it's like we've all become these digital nomads overnight, you know. So maybe we won't go back to this concept of you know, having to be in a certain place 10 months a year because our kids are at school, or because the office is somewhere. You know, the office is anywhere now, isn't it? I mean, we've all become nomads overnight. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe that will change things. I have some interest from people from the States who are looking to invest in Colombia for that reason. They see, the population globally becoming a lot more mobile, and therefore being able to live and work anywhere. So they really want to get in on those sorts of places, you know, the sort of co-working hostel model that, you know, Selena does so well. And, you know, I think that will be something that gains ground as a consequence of this. It's only going to get stronger and stronger, really, people moving around throughout the year.
It's fascinating. I hadn't thought of that so much. And of course, with the direct flights and greater communication, it can happen. Your kids could be in my hotel, but the best internet in Mompos is really not very good. We're still out there in the wild. I was thinking of just a side anecdote. A friend of mine in the UK living in, I guess it's Somerset, and his wife works in an international school. And of course, you know, the kids never came back from holidays, and she's got Chinese students and Thai students, and then, so, you know, from basically the far end of the world all the way back. So she has to start giving lessons at like 5 a.m. and then, you know, again at 7 and then again. But fortunately, her day's over by about 2. But it's just this staggered nature of her life because of these homeschooling virtual classes, which I found very interesting indeed on an international basis. Well, I don't
We considered going back to the UK. There was an emergency flight out, and I considered going back to the UK with the boys. And they would have probably enjoyed it more because they have to get up still at 6 o'clock to be at school at 6:45, which, you know, it's ridiculous, really. I don't understand why we have to put our kids through that, but I've never understood that. But then, you know, in England, they would have been going to school at like midday, yes, finishing at 8. So my 14-year-old would have been super happy with that. I mean, it's just, you know, everything's so, it's like everything, the universe is kind of unraveling right now, and then we're putting it all back together again, it feels like, for me. And you know, who knows what that's going to look like. It could look completely different after this. And I really hope that we don't just go back to the way of doing things before, because that's how we were doing it. Because it was wrong, right? The reason, you know, that we're having so many problems was because of the way we were doing things before. So this is a moment of reflection, and we should really make the most of it.
Yeah, definitely. I think we should definitely be working on it. Of course, never take eye off the issue that, you know, people are dying. You know, we've got to really look after ourselves, look after our loved ones, you know, and obey the rules. You're under complete lockdown there in Cartagena. They call it the toque de queda, which is almost like a curfew. I mean, but it's like an all-day curfew. This is a tough time, extraordinary times. And, you know, only a few months ago, the government was still, you know, harping on about the new petroleum was going to be tourism and the orange economy and or the creative economy. And now look at us. It changed on a dime.
It doesn't feel like that anymore, does it? I mean, you know, it doesn't feel like there's money being pumped into us like they are into the oil or the mining industries. Mm. And I'm sure they'll be saving those industries before us. So,
oh, yeah.
You know, because, yeah, it's really tough. I mean, there's been no support from the government, which, understandable, they don't have any money. I get it. 60% of the budget is debt. You know, 60% is too high, and you know, it's very difficult to imagine how they're going to bail everybody out when nobody knows when the industry's likely to kind of get back online. So much uncertainty. So yeah, but it would be nice to imagine that, you know, there were forward-thinking people in government now who could see this as an opportunity to invest in infrastructure that could be of use. You know, in a year's time, you know, whether that's, I don't know, you know, building, you know, making sure that the capacity is there for the, you know, the airport, for people being able to get through the airport safely, which is going to be the biggest bottleneck. And to make sure that people are being screened properly so that the destination isn't at risk from further contagion and all these sort of terrible things that you now have to think about. But you know, that should be the priority right now, you know, for the people who are in making those decisions. They should be thinking about these things, whether it's like being able to invest in properties or, you know, upgrading facilities like, you know, hotels or eco lodges or even just, you know, basic infrastructure to get to kind of develop these places. There's no money, unfortunately, but you know, if there was, that's where I'd be putting the money, rather than trying to save industries that are, you know, part of the problem, you know, and keep things afloat that are no longer necessary. It's difficult, but you see what you know. You see the way the economies around the world are responding. It seems really retroactive. You know that they're trying to save industries that got us into this situation in the first place, rather than just pumping money into renewable energy or something that could, you know, take us forward. There is a good conversation taking place about that in certain places, but not enough.
Not enough. Well, I wish you all the best for this period and, of course, the months that come, and whether we survive or not, I certainly am weighing up my options as well. It's a tough time. But I'd like to thank you so much, Rainbow Nelson, for your profound reflections on this situation and what we can possibly be doing to improve. On the other side, if we come out, or there's an evolution on the way out. And be sure to check out Rainbow's page, ticartagena.com. That's This Is Cartagena. I'm sure you'll find something there of interest, well, to each and every single one of you. So Rainbow, please stay safe, look after your boys, look after your friends, your family, and so on there in Cartagena. And thank you again.
Thank you very much, Richard.
Yeah,
likewise. Take care of yourself.
You too. Thank you, and goodbye from Columbia Calling. I've been Richard McColl. This has been episode 327 with Rainbow Nelson. Check out his website, ticartagena.com. Thank you again. We'll be back next week. Bye-bye.